Sure is. The interactive portion of the show now. We are with our special guest, Libby Halevi, and we're talking about her work, Yes, I Glow in the Dark, which is an incredible book about Three Mile Island in Fukushima. But we're talking about other issues as well. So jump on board. You've heard the conversation, and we'll be back with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with our special guest now, Libby Halevi. And we're talking about her book, Yes, I Glow in the Dark. I bet people do glow in the dark sometimes when they get a little bit too much radiation, huh?
I don't know about them, but when I came back to Los Angeles after having been at Three Mile Island and I told people where I had been, that was one of the things that they would say to me. They go, oh, you don't glow in the dark, do you? And they'd back away from me like it was contagious or something. So I just turned that around and made that the title of my book.
Well, good job there, indeed. Okay, let's go to the phones. Lots of them are calling. Boise, Idaho. Patrick's with us on Coast to Coast. Patrick, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hey, I grew up back there in Flint, Michigan.
Oh, boy.
I'm having a hard time hearing.
That's okay. Go ahead. I'll relay if I have to.
Yeah, we used to walk along the Flint River, and you should have seen all the chemicals like the automotive plants were dumping in.
Oh, yeah. It was a dumping ground.
Yeah, they had the big old culverts coming out of the factories and just dumping chemicals right into the river. And then there's another plant there in Mount Morris, Michigan called Fisher Body. It became one of the super fun cleanups. They used to have like deer inside and you'd walk up to a fence and feed them. And then all of a sudden they started seeing like two-headed deer and, you know, extra legs and tumors. And that's when they realized that they had a problem out there.
Well, it seems to be everywhere. Back to the Flint River for a second, Libby. Nobody cleaned that river up. How could they even think about tapping into it?
Absolutely. Total disregard for human life, for human dignity. There, again, I can only think that this is mental illness made manifest. And because there are dollars attached to it and they get more dollars, the crazier they are and the more disconnected they are, that something is built into our system that reinforces the mental illness aspects of the ruling class, which are supposed to be our elected officials, so that they can very cavalierly go, okay, we'll just poison the city because there will be more money to be made this way.
Okay, next up, let's go to Andrew in Pine Springs, Texas. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask a question about the WIPP site in Carlsbad, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was about a year or two ago, they had a problem with the radiation leakage out there. And since I live close enough, I'm just curious if anybody has heard anything else. Local news and national news hasn't said anything else about it. And I was just curious if there's anything going on with that.
Yes, there's a lot going on, and thanks a lot for asking. WIPP stands for the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant in Carlsbad, New Mexico. And this was supposed to be one of the country's only deep repositories for mid-level nuclear waste. Plutonium-contaminated nuclear weapons waste was supposed to be stored there. And actually, we're coming up on the anniversary on Valentine's Day, of all things.
Nice.
2 years ago. That was when a 55-gallon drum from Los Alamos exploded underground. They will give you different language, but we've seen the pictures. It exploded. The top popped off, and all kinds of stuff came out. Part of what came out was both plutonium and americium, which went up the ventilation shaft before they put the HEPA filters on. And in the first 33, 35 minutes after this explosion happened, there was a direct venting of radioactive materials, highly radioactive materials, into the Carlsbad area. This has never been appropriately tracked because EPA came in, and first of all, there weren't proper monitors there. And when they put down their portable monitors, as it was pointed out to me, they were in areas where the wind blew away from these areas. So, of course, the numbers would be artificially registered as low. I've covered this very extensively on Nuclear Hot Seat, and I'm actually doing a special on this in another 2 weeks, just before Valentine's Day, to keep people up to date on what's happening there. But there's been an attempted cleanup. Energy Secretary Moniz keeps saying, oh, it's going to be open by, and he keeps on setting dates. He set it for March of 2016. Well, that's not going to happen. Now he's talking about late 2016, early 2017. That's not going to happen. This thing is contaminated. It's contaminated underground in the tunnels that are there in the salt areas. They've not been able to do proper maintenance in areas, so there are places where the ceiling is sagging because they don't get a chance to go in and do the regular maintenance. And they can't have their what they used to be able to have in for their equipment and their personnel because they can't get enough air down there to run the equipment and have people breathe because they had to turn off that ventilation system because it was contaminated with radiation. So part of what they're doing to mediate the site is to put in another ventilation system, but that's taking time, that's taking money, and meanwhile there's no place to put the waste anywhere in this country. It's got to sit exactly where it is. There are communities that are saying, oh, give it to us, but they don't have any facilities for taking care of it, and they aren't taking a look at the long-term consequences of things like storing highly radioactive material over the Ogallala Aquifer, which is right underneath a waste control specialist, which has taken a lot of the waste that otherwise would have gone to WIP.
Are you concerned at all, Libby, about your own safety?
Of course.
You would have to be.
There's no way I cannot be. Look, I live in Southern California. I am within 20 miles of Porter Ranch, but I am within 30 miles of the Santa Susana Field Lab, which was an experimental nuclear reactor that had a meltdown in 1959 that was completely covered, nothing was said about it. It was completely covered up until after Three Mile Island, when some students at UCLA in the nuclear policy department under Dan Hirsch started looking around to see if maybe something like Three Mile Island had happened before, and discovered that in the hills above Simi Valley, there was this Rocketdyne facility with a meltdown that took place in an experimental nuclear reactor. It had an experimental salt coolant in there. 13 fuel rods melted down, and there was no containment structure. So they said, wow, there's a lot of radiation in here. Let's just open the vents and let it out. And that's exactly what they did. And there are documented cancer clusters of people who lived in the area. I personally know people who can be considered to be in three familial cancer clusters who lived and grew up in that area. That's 30 miles away. Porter Ranch is 20 miles away. I take a vacation. I go to Three Mile Island. You don't want me picking your destinations for you.
Jeez. With people who have lived in the Porter Ranch area and they've been displaced, we don't know when they're going back to their homes, do we?
We don't know if they're going back to their homes.
Oh, my God.
You know, this is still in play. I tend to push this as far into the future as I possibly can. These people right now are going through the existential crisis that the lives they expected to live and be able to manipulate within, because let's face it, Porter Ranch is a place that has a lot of money. You have to in order to be able to live there. Those are expensive houses. So these are people with financial options mm-hmm. who are used to being able to have things the way they want them within certain levels of tolerance, which is okay. You got the money, that's what it brings you. But suddenly, everything about the system that they have trusted and believed in and participated in so successfully has fallen apart on them, put them at risk. They are not being told the truth. They're being told, hey, it's not a problem, when their kids have clots falling out of their noses, when there are reports of teenage kids who are having trouble breathing, turning blue, going to the hospital and being told that their lungs are the equivalent of the lungs of an old person, when there are all these other, there are rashes, there are migraines, there are all these nauseas, the symptoms that are coming up. And these are just what are happening right now. What's the long-term impact? Nobody's being told the full truth about this.
No, it, apparently not. But why?
Why?
Liability?
Of course. Oh, there are The biggest mistake that the gas company made with Porter Ranch is that it is a moneyed, educated community. And these people are already inundating lawyers throughout the Southern California area with lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit. One of the things from the town meeting is that the judge or the judges who are going to be involved in this are working out ways for all of the attorneys to work cumulatively with each other and in coordination with each other, because it will tie up the courts for decades if they have to hear these court cases one at a time.
That's got to be a class action. Got to be.
And there are a number of class action suits being proposed right now. It's kind of like the lawyers' derby that they're having. It's like they're all in competition. They're all trying to be Aaron Brockovich and get the big thing.
Yeah.
I don't care how many there are. These people deserve to have the legal representation. But before that, they need to, in my estimation, get out of Dodge, take care of their health. And only when they are at some kind of a safe distance and are remediating their bodies and their lives, only then turn around to the legal side of it and rip a new one for everyone who is in charge of making the decisions that led to this disaster.
Let's go to Canada now. Jeff's with us on the international line. Hey, Jeff, go ahead.
Well, before I ask the question, I'd just like to pass on some information. This is just absolutely ridiculous. I don't know if you're aware, but on the western shore, or sorry, the eastern shore of Lake Huron, mm-hmm. right across from Michigan, the provincial government has given authorization to bury all the nuclear waste from the seven reactors that we're using to generate electric power here in Ontario underneath the ground, right beside the shore of Lake Huron.
Oh, jeez.
This is now they're saying that, it's a stable bedrock because it's part of the Niagara Escarpment. But the thing is, it's two miles down, and just think of all the downstream, all the contamination. If something were to happen, you've got all that nuclear contamination going right at the St. Lawrence. Like, it's just the stupidity is absolutely astounding, and the fact that the provincial government recently gave the go-ahead for Bruce, and it's on the Bruce, as I say, it's just at the bottom of the Bruce Peninsula near a place called Bruce and Tiverton, so you can look at it on the map. But the question I've got, yesterday I heard about all the starfish from Alaska right down to the Baja are dying, and they said, well, they think that it's biological. But as soon as I heard that, I thought, hold on a second, that's got to be contamination from Fukushima. Do you know anything about this?
Thank you, first of all, for bringing up about OPG, about Ontario Power Generation and their plan to bury the waste. There's a bigger question for me here, in that the Stop the Great Lakes Nuclear Dump, which is a coalition, has delivered 184 resolutions representing municipalities including Chicago, Detroit, Flint, Toronto, Milwaukee, Rochester, and many others, saying, don't do this. This represents 22 million people that has been delivered. There was a petition signed by over 92,000 people that has gone to Canada, and nothing is stopping this thing. Nothing is even causing a hiccup or a blip. So my question is, who's behind this? How much money is it? How many people have been bought off? And what can be done to stop it? Because they're treating it like a done deal, and it doesn't deserve to be.
All about greed, isn't it?
But this is a psychotic level of greed. Because we're talking the Great Lakes, and the Great Lakes are not, Lake Huron is not independent from the other five lakes. It goes to all of them, and it's the largest freshwater supply in the world. And they're risking that. And to what this gentleman was also saying, we talked before about the Pacific Ocean and the die-offs. And yes, there, to my way of thinking, it's only logical that Fukushima has had some impact, because you look at a point of origin. 5 years ago, and we're coming up on the fifth anniversary of Fukushima on March 11th of this year, but 5 years ago, none of this was taking place. and it has happened progressively. The first year, there was the starfish were getting a little wonky.
Yeah.
By the second of the year, the starfish were dying off, and then we went through all the other species.
Well, and all the beached animals, too.
Oh, yeah, the birds are dying. I haven't gone to the beach, and I haven't brought my dog to the beach since Fukushima happened because I can't trust it. I'm worried about the morning marine layer in Santa Monica and along the coast because
that just brings
that
it right
can also
in.
Carry radiation
it sure
if
does.
it is in the water, and nobody's testing appropriately. It's like planned deniability.
What if they're testing it and they're not telling us because it's so bad?
Oh, well, yeah, that's possible too.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if that is the case. In which case, I would say, if you know anybody who is working at the highest levels of the something like the gas company or Southern California Edison, which ran San Onofre into the ground and is now making a killing off of its decommissioning, making a financial killing as well as possibly a human killing off of it. As long as we keep our eyes on those people, and if we see them leaving and going elsewhere, that's a signal. Also, a recent interviewee of mine was an activist from New Zealand, and when I joked with him on the interview, and I said, "So, you know, what does it take for somebody to go down to New Zealand and immigrate?" He said, "Boatloads of money, but you're going to have to get in line because the billionaires and the millionaires are already buying up the sheep station and the land down here so that they've got some place to go."
Let's go next to Flint, Michigan. Miles is with us. Hey, Miles, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thanks, George and Libby. I thought of one question. I'm very thankful on Sunday somebody dropped off 3 gallons of water to me here
good.
At my house.
Good.
And I am disabled. I'm not completely disabled, but money's a little short, so having to get rides to the store and stuff like that since I just moved from Southern California back here to be with my kids. And they handed out Brita water filters for our sinks to assist us. I'm curious as to how well those would actually get rid of the lead.
You know, I wish I could speak to that, but I can't. However, I would suggest that you go to the Brita website, that you call up the company, you find out what the efficacy is of the Brita filter's ability to filter out lead. Does it work? And if so, how often do you have to replace the filter in order to keep that operating so it doesn't risk either clogging or possibly passing more lead onto you? I'm not familiar with that. My focus has been on finding brands that work against radiation, and I have found two. So that's where my focus has gone, but good luck to you. You move from Southern California to Flint, Michigan. That's frying pan into the fire as far as, you know, toxic exposure goes.
Heck, if I lived off of the ocean, I would have my own detectors.
Absolutely.
You'd have to. Testing on a regular basis. Miles, good luck to you.
Good luck, Miles.
Let's go to David in Georgia. We'll do that after the break. My gosh, this is going by fast, Libby. Just got a final little segment when we come back. But once again, tell us about the website and your Facebook account.
It's nuclearhotseat.com. I actually have two programs up. 238 has to deal with Porter Ranch in general, which breaks the radon story. And today's show, 240, has information on how to protect health. And you can also connect with me on Facebook. There's Nuclear Hot Seat. There are two different sites for that. So just come friend me. And if you go to the website, get the free chapter of my book because that puts you on my database.
Super. And if you want to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, please do so. Always available. And you simply go to coasttocoastam.com, far right-hand corner, click the icons, and then you are in business. And if you need to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. We're going to come back with a final half hour to go of phone calls before Coast to Coast continues on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Libby Halevi with us. Libby, just a few days ago, the Michigan Attorney General said, get your kids away from the Flint water as fast as you can. That's kind of frightening.
Yes, and I have to give him great praise for having been that direct in saying it, because I'm sure that there was a lot of pressure on him to soft pedal it. Anytime there's an ecological disaster, the first thing that seems to happen in the corridors of power is CYA, cover your posterior. And he did not. So, you know, kudos to him for telling it the way it needed to be told so that people could protect their children.
How long do you think it'll take Flint to reconnect with the Detroit Municipal Water System?
I have no strong familiarity with that. It can't be soon enough. And then it's a matter of flushing the pipes and any other places where the water may have pooled, and getting those people in some kind of a detoxification protocol, doing whatever they can. I don't know what can be done to mitigate against lead, because that's not an area of study for me.
No, but this is something they've got to do.
Absolutely. They have to find ways to detoxify, to get whatever is in their body out of their body. There is a supplement that is used in nuclear matters. It was used in Chernobyl. It was given to the liquidators. It was actually baked into cookies for the children, and that is zeolite. And the best quality zeolite is, it's in a liquid form, and it's purified. And what it does is it attracts the heavy metals from the body and traps it in there in the structure of the zeolite so that it can be flushed out of the body. And that is something that they need to be taking, they need to be putting in their water, they need to be, you know, giving themselves facials. The liquidators at Chernobyl used to put a thick paste of it on their skin before they put on their suits, because it would absorb the radiation and would provide a layer of protection to them. And it works against all heavy metals. So that's one thing that they can look at to do.
Well, they tried to cut corners and they got caught, you know?
Oh, horrible.
Back to the phones. John in Ohio, east of the Rockies. Hello, John. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey.
Love your show.
Thank you, sir.
A question I have is some of the military arsenals that we have around the country. I know we have one here in Ravenna, Ohio, that has chemical and biological agents that cannot be moved because they're so volatile, and they've been there for, well, since World War II. And also another question I have that you guys might be able to answer. Stationed at Camp Lejeune, Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune down in North Carolina. And I've received letters from Headquarters Marine Corps about the drinking water that was on that base during the time that I was there back in the early 80s. And I'll go ahead and take my answer offline.
George, I had a hard time hearing that. Could you repeat, please?
Well, he was talking about a drinking water system at a base that I did not hear either. But I guess that problem's all over the place, isn't it?
The water has been made so toxic in this country. It's almost like we're being forced to buy bottled water, which in some instances is not even necessarily that good. But we used to be able to get water for free. It came out of the tap. You could, if you were hiking, you could drink directly from streams. You didn't have to worry about purification. You didn't have to worry about poisoning yourself if you were drinking a glass of water. And the ignorance behind this, I'm reminded of a scene from the movie, I'm trying to think of the name of it. The one where everybody was old, but they bathed in the water and then they became young again.
Sounds like a Twilight Zone.
It was a science fiction one, but anyway, Brian Dunleavy was in one.
Oh, Cocoon.
That was what it was. And Brian Dunleavy, when he finds out that these people had been in the water that had been holding these eggs, he went, "You mean in this world you have, what have you done to the water? You have poisoned the water." He had this horrifying response to it, and that was decades ago.
Yeah, well, he thought they were going to kill off his eggs, where his other ETs were in the eggs ready to be hatched, and he thought we were going to pollute it.
But it was the pollution of the water that he responded to.
Yep.
And that has always stayed with me, and we have progressively done it. We haven't turned this around. We have not made the safety of our water supply, which is national security, we have not made the safety of our water, the cleaning of our environment. We've not made that a priority in this country. There seems to be no will behind it to genuinely provide for our safety and security when it comes to the environment, as though that's somehow incidental to our life.
Let's go to Costa Mesa, California. Joy's with us. Hey, Joy, go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, you think I watch Ancient Aliens faithfully, and I think back, I don't remember the name of the Indian tribe in the Southwest. Their ancient origin story is that they lived underground and came out only when it was safe to do so on the face of the earth, and they were helped by the ant people. And I'm wondering, are we going to have to go back underground and
those
wait
the,
for all of this stuff to
we
blow
might.
Over? And
those were the Hopis.
Start over again. Yeah.
Hopi Indians.
The Hopis did that. It looks like it's time for us to start digging a few tunnels and get ready to hunker down.
Well, we may have to with what they're doing to the atmosphere and the
and the water and the crops
yep.
and the food. It's not even going to be safe to eat soon.
Nope, not at all. Hey, thanks for the call. You know, the water in St. Louis is relatively cheap, Libby. It's, I think 3 months supply, a couple hundred bucks. That's not bad.
No, that's not bad. But the issue certainly in North St. Louis is with the Westlake landfill and the Bridgeton fire and the cancer clusters that have been shown around Coldwater Creek, and this is all in a very close area, you have other problems that you are dealing with there.
Yes, we do. Simi in North Carolina now on the wild card line. Hello, Simi.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Thank you for this great show tonight, and thank you for all the work that you've been doing.
Sure.
On these issues, I wanted to add to it that if anybody listening is concerned, they can go to epa.gov and type in Superfund, all one word, and it will show all the toxic waste sites throughout the whole United States.
It's frightening.
And list what chemicals are in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And also, as far as water goes and it being clean or any municipality saying it's clean, simply because it's clear and that they put chlorine and fluoride in it, it's not clean.
No.
And that's what I found that's been going on. I know I've brought it up several times, George, about what's been going on at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and the Superfund site there and perchlorate, the Metropolitan Water District that goes throughout Los Angeles and Southern California. They also have perchlorate in their water. So that cannot be removed through Brita or anything else. It costs millions of dollars for a municipality to build these machines to try to remove the perchlorate from the water. I just wanted to add that to share.
You're right about that. It it must be a mess, Libby, the toxic waste that is in water.
There's also the problem that the aquifers are being contaminated. There was a study that came out from the University of Nebraska they kind of crunched the numbers from EPA and CDC and a few other sources of the government, and they discovered that uranium was present in the Oglala Aquifer, which is also called the High Plains Aquifer, which underlies a vast swath of about 8 states in central United States, and also there was uranium found in the drinking water there, and also uranium that was found in many sites in California and up into the mountains. This was from naturally occurring uranium that was made water soluble because it was in contact with, I think it's the phosphates in fertilizer that made the uranium water soluble, and then it was able to go down into the aquifer. So there's uranium now in water that we used to be able to trust as being ancient and clean.
David in Georgia, it's your turn, David. Go ahead.
Hey, first time caller here, George.
Great, super.
Libby, my question to you is, why aren't the politicians and the federal government holding the big three automakers for toxicating the Flint River? When I grew up there in the early 80s, on the way through, we were always taught not to fish, not to drink from that river.
Oh, jeez. It's all about money. It's got to be, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
got to be.
I would say follow the money as regards the politicians.
And why don't they fine them? I guess they don't want to, huh? It's a good possibility. Mike in Cleveland, let's go to you, Michael. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, George and Libby.
Hi there.
Hello.
It's not just about the money, George, because nuclear fallout always comes with political fallout. They're trying to prevent the panic. And I wanted to get more to my point, if I may. In the last 3 years, my mother has died from cancer complicated by a thyroid disorder. My sister and I are both in our 30s and have thyroid disorders.
Oh, geez.
And all of this has been diagnosed since the Fukushima incident. Thyroid disorders in my area are skyrocketing. We live in a major city that borders Lake Erie. We are on the bottom of the watershed. Everything in the surrounding area from Canada all the way down to Kentucky drains to us in some form or fashion. And here's, I won't say the name, but a major home improvement chain has been giving out these wonderful free testing kits. And you had asked if they are testing for it or if they are. Yeah, they are. They're camouflaging it behind hard water, and they're asking if you're having dry or itchy skin, if you feel nauseous, if you're losing your hair on this form. I'm literally holding it in my hand because I thought it was weird, so I grabbed one. And I never sent it in, but they're putting these out in actually a few of the major home improvement chains. And, like, since when has hard water been anything other than a consumer problem? If you don't like how hard your water is, you put it in a reverse osmosis filter. You know, but now suddenly they're worried about it since Fukushima.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
we used to have a water softener on a farm I once had. That was easy.
Right. You know, they're not cheap, but it's doable.
So you think Fukushima may be the cause of your affliction?
Yes, absolutely.
Where are you located?
He's in Cleveland.
You know, rainouts definitely happened in the eastern part of the United States. You might want to check. And March 11 of 2011 is when Fukushima happened. I would check to see what the rain pattern was, certainly for the 3 months after that, to see if there was a period of heavy rain. And if so, that might be related to a rainout. And if you don't have access to a radiation meter, you might want to get it just to see what you're exposed to in your area.
That might be the smartest thing to do. It's amazing that his whole family is coming down with this. Have you seen that before, where whole families, entire families get something?
Yes. That's the way that cancer clusters have been tracked in North St. Louis, in the area around the Santa Susana Field Lab here in Southern California. If there is pollution that is happening that is of a heavily toxic nature or of a radiologic nature, it will show up in all the life forms in that area, in greater or lesser extent, depending on their particular health, how much exposure they have actually had. It's much more dangerous for children. It's much more dangerous for women, because with women, it's the reproductive area that gets it the worst.
How about older people?
And older people, too. That's the third demographic that gets it the worst. But children, because they are growing and reproducing so quickly, the damage can show up in quite large measure. Very quickly.
Leukemias for them, right?
Leukemia shows up in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. Let's go next to Michael. He's in Costa Mesa, California as well. Hello, Michael. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi there. Thanks, Livy, for your work. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yep, we sure can, Mike.
Great. Say, what my concern is that, and it should just be my concern, but it should be everybody on this planet, is Fukushima. And, you know, all of the other areas where we have so many other problems, they're important too, but Fukushima is, I'm just curious, so where's the common sense of the general populace of the world not paying attention? And I think somehow we have to build a coalition to find a solution.
Well, there's no question about it. In these particular cases, if you don't see it, you're not concerned about it. And that's the sad part of all of this, Libby. And, you know, they don't see radiation.
it's almost like radiation cooperates in its own spreading because, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And most
exactly.
people don't walk around with a radiation mirror. It's a fairly expensive little piece of equipment. And because of that, and because there's no attention being paid by the media, there's been no follow-up. There were suggestions made immediately after Fukushima happened that all the scientists of the world somehow get together, that the United Nations have some kind of a conference, that there be this international brain trust to try and figure out the different ways of solving the problem. And Japan refused, the United States clamped down on it, and it never took place. There were things that could have helped in the early days that are now no longer viable because of how far the pollution from it, the radiation from it, has spread, and how incompetent the Japanese government and Tokyo Electric Power Company have been.
You would think somebody who had a radiation detector would alert the local media whenever it was way out of kilter. You would think somebody somewhere in some house would go out and test and go, oh my God, it's out of, and call the media about it.
There are reports all the time about this. There's a man in Southern California, a freelance writer named Michael Collins, who has a site called Enviro Reporter. And he's an excellent investigative reporter. And from the first day of Fukushima, he had cameras set up on radiation meters in his home, which is in Santa Monica. He also had another one set up somewhere in Glendale, so you could get real-time readings on it. And he has periodically published articles on it, and he's very compelling because he's very thorough in his research. It doesn't get picked up by mainstream media. And I've heard from at least one source within a newsroom of a PBS station that they were told immediately after Fukushima that they could not use the word fallout in any form in any kind of reporting that took place after Fukushima. And I've heard of other instances too where stories have been spiked, when reporters have been taken off stories or simply not assigned stories because someone somewhere doesn't want this covered.
And someone somewhere got to the editor or the publisher or the owner.
Yes, absolutely. And it came down the line of command and nobody gets to question it.
Levy, 30 seconds left. What's the best advice you can give individuals who may be living next to some of these regions?
Get information. Nuclear Hot Seat's a great site because we've got health information. We've got information about all of the different sites around the world. That's what the show is dedicated to. Get informed. Learn what you can do to protect your health. Get out of the hot spots if you can. And get active. Get mad and channel that anger into action. We need everybody. We need calls to government. We need demonstrations. We need petitions. We need all of it.
You got it. Thanks for your work. Keep in touch with us. I'd like to use you as a resource here at Coast to Coast AM. Up next, Buried Alive, the terrifying history of our most primal fear, isn't it? Also, amazing dogs, some of the things they do with their owners. We'll be back.